Naja Baptist is an associate professor of political science and African American studies at the University of Arkansas, and he's been awarded a pair of national grants to work on two research projects, including one that will examine the relationship between COVID-19 and Black trauma. He's with us now to tell us more about his work. Thank you for joining us, and congratulations on getting those two grants. From what
Thank
I
you.
Yeah. So from what I understand, you helped secure more than $1.6 million through the National Science Foundation's Build and Broaden 2.0 program. It encourages research collaborations between scholars at minority-serving institutions and then scholars at other institutions or organizations. So what is the importance of building these relationships and having these collaborations?
I think one of the core principles of these collaborations is the idea of training both faculty and staff and building pipelines between historically Black colleges and universities and historically white colleges and universities. Traditionally, when research is done inside the academy, it's really, as someone Armin argued, that everybody's sitting at separate tables. And some of them tables don't even have food on them, is one way to describe it. But for someone like me, who is a three-time HBCU graduate from North Carolina Central, Jackson State, and from Howard, I had a point of personal privilege where I wanted to give back to the institutions that helped me get to where I am. That was my primary goal, because I knew that there were professors as an undergrad at North Carolina Central that actually paid out of their pocket for me to go to academic conferences my last year, or Dr. DeAndre Orr at Jackson State, who literally made sure paid me out of his pocket my first semester at Jackson State because there was funding issues and they were trying to set it up so I can get my research assistantship. Or at Howard, where I had just completed my PhD in 2020, kind of the struggles as a graduate student trying to find funding and trying to find additional opportunities. That was the primary goal at first. And then to connect them with historically white colleges and universities, such as University of Arkansas, Georgia State, Emory, and others, and University of Michigan, I think that presents an opportunity to be able to build a bridge between the grassroots and dominant universities that have really elaborate research facilities and institutions and kind of share in the tools that are used between the two universities. When we started this project, originally it was me and Dr. PA as graduate students. He was at Oklahoma and I was at Howard. But the notion is that there's so much untapped potential. And there were so many states that were ripe for it: North Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi. And we're trying to simply understand this ongoing political phenomenon within political environments. This contentious, problem-laden political environment, and then deal with grassroots organizing at the same time and national movements. And so, in order to do this, you have to go to where the people are and where the people are really active. Like I said, it does two things. First of all, it trains students, which is basically what some of the professors did for me as an undergrad, taking me to these conferences and actually getting me into programs and showing me how to do research. And then it allowed both junior and senior faculty to kind of share in traditions and tips to help guide them through. And most of this research, much of this funding will result in publications, which means that you will likely see undergrads who, as an undergrad, I wish I would have had a publication, would have saved me some time. But you will see undergrads actually pushing themselves through and actually producing high level of public scholarship. So I think that's one of the main things that kind of stood out for me was the idea of being able to give voice to marginalized communities and to be able to empower marginalized students at historically Black colleges and universities, and as well as connect the faculty.
So a way to give back, but in doing so, it sounds like you're going to be a bit busy for a little bit since you've got two projects to kind of lead. The first one, the larger grant, is 1.16 million. So that particular one with that project, you're going to be looking at how organizations and social movements mediate political preferences and policy agendas among the mass public. You're also looking at how the collaboration and interaction between organizations and social movements shape traditional and non-traditional forms of political participation. Why were these two questions the ones that you wanted to answer? And what are you kind of hoping that will come from this research that you'll find?
When we were creating these questions, I think one of the primary things was that we were interested in the collaboration between organizations and social movements and how these interactions shape traditional and non-traditional forms of political participation. Because I think with the past presidential election and with the last, let's say, almost 10 years of politics, what we're seeing is politics being created outside of traditional borders. You still see the traditional Congress, et cetera, but what you saw with this proliferation of both waves of the Black Lives Matter movement, one and two, this kind of increase in simply protests, even in like North Carolina with HK on J, more on Mondays. What you're seeing is more citizen participation within politics. And they're not using the traditional form, right? So we're going to measure it using, you know, quantitative measures such as, you know, surveys, et cetera, et cetera. But then there's going to be other things as well that hasn't been kind of tapped into, such as social media. Right? Or what I call real-time responses. So one of the things that we're trying to do is create something called mobile response team. When you deal with research, and I actually got this from a bench to bedside model from the medical field, but when you deal primarily in research, it's usually reactive as opposed to proactive. We usually get the information about things after phenomena have occurred. And then by the time you finish analyzing the data, it's probably 5 or 6 years removed, right? And it's kind of stale in its understanding. And then people start to answer the questions kind of like, you know, how does American policy shape public institutions and institutional political behaviors? And why can't we really predict these things better? Kind of like, you know, why couldn't we predict the January 6th? Why couldn't we predict, you know, uprisings in Ferguson and Baltimore, et cetera, et cetera? And I think that's a function of not having these mobile response teams to be able to be on the ground as soon as things happen, right? So as soon as a protest breaks out inside these major cities, which happens all the time in D.C., I mean, literally every weekend is another protest, but to be able to tap into the attitudes and behaviors of those people that are participating inside these things, I think it is important.
So the idea is with these mobile response teams is you'll be able to send researchers in, I guess, in real time to survey the opinions of the crowd?
Yes, absolutely. That's just one aspect of it. Like I said, the other aspect is actually doing ethnographic studies and kind of understanding what motivates and influences protesters as well. We're going to do focus groups. I think the idea is to be able to really understand the American citizenry, right? And kind of what is motivating them to become politically engaged. And so, basically, the idea is to be able to establish data analysis that centers around cutting edge training, right? And cutting edge technology. And that's another thing as well, not making use of the technology at our disposal. Traditionally, when we take surveys and do surveys, it's done by some sort of major corporation, which we'll probably end up using too. But to be able to have students to engage in, you know, the foundation of democracy, engaging in, you know, taking surveys during the middle of protesting, that's something totally different, right? You're getting that instant thermometer, instant analysis from people. And it's not you waiting months or years later to actually try to tap into that.
No, that sounds really interesting. I'll be interested to see what the results of that are. I know the second grant that you got is for another project. It'll examine the relationship between COVID-19 and Black trauma. And the research there, your interviews, you're going to talk to folks in the South about the Black political experience. So and it's a year-long grant. So can you tell me a little bit about how this one is going to work?
So you're looking at several different things here. So essentially what you're trying to understand is how Black identity goes into coping with trauma. Right. And one of those traumas being COVID-19. So traditionally, we actually take a scale that deals with something called John Henryism. active coping scale, right? And it's measured basically based on 12 items. Some questions I ask, I've always felt that I could make of my life pretty much of what I wanted to make of it. Or I don't let my personal feelings get in the way of getting my job done, et cetera, et cetera. These are things that actually deal with the idea of how people deal with trauma, right? And this kind of history of Black trauma that exists within the Black community. I think what was important too about some of the questions that we created in relationship to COVID was simply just about if people felt worried about COVID-19, people felt worried about how often that they were being exposed to information about COVID-19, and about what their thinking was around COVID-19. I think when we have a greater conversation about historical trauma within the Black community, we have to have this conversation about why there is an apprehension even towards taking vaccines within the African-American community. The conversation about the Tuskegee experiment, the Black women's eugenic program to actually remove reproductive organs, and kind of this idea of how does Black identity help us process during these kind of highly, highly traumatic periods. You know what I mean? You can think of, you know, back to the Great Depression of 1929, of how Black citizens actually were more disproportionately affected by these things, but still figured out some way to be able to survive even with the least amount of resources as well. So I think the relationship to COVID-19 and the idea of Black trauma, one of the main points that we also wanted to tease out as well was just the notion of how do we comprehend the Black experience during these national pandemics? And why is it that African Americans were more disproportionately affected? That's also based on the history of access to healthcare resources as well. These are things that have to be talked about when we're trying to understand Black response to and Black trauma within these national pandemics. But I think the notion is, in both projects, the kind of broader impact is, and understanding is, to create a more perfect union, right? To add to this idea of what it means to have a more perfect union and kind of tell the story that is yet to be told in a more nuanced and more comprehensive manner.
Well, we look forward to reading the results. Congratulations again on the grants, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk about your research with us.
Thank you very much.